Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Good morning, everybody. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt, hanging with you here
until 12 o'clock on a... It's a brisk day. It's really cold.
I thought you were about to say what day of the week is it.
No, it's a really cold Wednesday morning.
Yeah, the temperature just not very nice this morning.
It's not getting better. It's just staying cold.
I left my house at 4:30 this morning. Mm-hmm. And it was -6. I was like, all right, I'm awake. Thank you for that, nature. That's super cool. Get here and it goes to -3. And I'm like, all right, it's better.
Right.
Like, warmed up pretty quick. Hour and a half later, I look at my phone again, and it's -6 again. And I'm like, what? What happened?
I'm having the problem, so I don't get here as early as you do. My problem is that my car screams when I open up the doors when it's cold. I mean, opening up the back door, because I'll throw my, you know, my backpack in there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I've got a two-hour lunch break, so I'll throw my Kindle back there, stuff like that. I open up the back door. It's like I'm assaulting my car. It just screech. I'm like, that's going to fall off. Something's going to break.
You got to put some WD-40
in
there.
It's the worst. And it's only when it's really cold. Like, yeah, every other time, it's fine. I don't open up the door a ton, but, you know, most days I'll open it once or twice to throw everything in there.
Yeah. It's just the cold is just
today, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to do that. Like, you're immediately screaming. I'm not going to. We'll just throw it in the passenger seat. Sorry I disturbed you. It's so cold.
For those wondering, right, and this is all based off my phone too. This is no like scientific thermometer we have outside or something like that. It is now 3. We are above zero, everybody. Congratulations. We did it.
Sun's out and we're at 3 degrees.
We made it.
Incredible.
It still feels like it's -1.
Still feels like it's -1.
Super cool. Love it.
Golly.
Don't you just love living here?
You said you love the winter.
No,
wait a second.
I do. I'm being sarcastic here. I very much enjoy this.
Say, I'm the one that, like, every time, like, November rolls around, I'm like, oh, good. My favorite time.
I will say, though, I draw the line when it starts to hurt your face if it's outside. That's when I'm like, okay, this is too much winter. Like,
This is too much winter.
Dial it back to, like, the 15 is, like, as low as I'll go. 15 is good. Like, that's, like, cool.
Speaking of weather, Kansas City, currently just off my phone, Sunday, cloudy, 33 degrees.
Mm.
Not bad. It's good football weather. It's good football weather.
You know what else happened? It snowed in New Orleans.
Is that a sign?
Is that a sign? It snowed in New Orleans, Zach. I mean, where else does it snow all the time?
All right. It also snows in Kansas City.
Stop.
So.
Don't do that to me. It snows more here.
Snows in Minnesota, too, and they just got whooped on in the first round.
Okay, fine. I'm trying to be optimistic here, and here you are just ruining my vibe.
I'm optimistic. Jumping through kind of like last game against Baltimore and then, you know, Houston and Kansas City, the last Kansas City game, week 11. I was confident Sunday night when the Bills had won, and it was like, all right, it's Kansas City again. It's you know, however many matchups in a row this is going to be where they're playing. I like this matchup a lot. We're going to dive a little bit more into it. Aaron Quinn of Cover One is going to join us at 11. Sal Capaccio at 11:30 as well. It's a fun matchup, I think, as well, because these two teams play so similarly. You know, these two teams went from the high-flying, they're just going to throw all over the yard. You just don't know what to do. You don't know how to stop them. They've got wizards at quarterbacks. They still have them. But now they're playing more ball control. They don't turn the ball over. They're kind of boring a little bit. Like, they still have the splash plays. Look at, you know, Mahomes running around, falling, throwing it to a wide open Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
Josh, against Denver, running around on fourth down, firing it across his body to Ty Johnson on fourth down. Like, they've still got the splash plays, but they're so much more methodical now. They're so much more deliberate in every single thing they do, even if it kind of frustrates you, whether it be, you know, continuing the run game, playing zone coverage, whatever. And it's just, I think this is a wonderful matchup because it really does feel like the two titans of the AFC, the two teams that have sort of figured out the NFL going after each other. The Chiefs just did it first. The Chiefs were ahead of the Bills in terms of their quote-unquote rebuild. It was never really a rebuild. They were making the playoffs with Alex Smith. They drafted Mahomes. Here we go. But they had the Hall of Fame talent beforehand, so they picked up titles first, inarguably. But now it feels like the Bills might be entering that stage. If they can get through this matchup on Sunday. And I can't wait. These two teams don't turn the ball over. They don't do any of that stuff. They make you screw up. We've talked about it. Every team that advanced in the divisional round was outgained in yards. Every team that had more total yards was 0-4. The difference for three of those four teams? Won the turnover battle. Kansas City didn't force a single turnover against Houston. They still won 23-14.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable what they're able to do. It's not just the penalties. It is that other teams make mistakes against them. They just do. Kymie Fairbairn misses a field goal and an extra point. Houston special teams. The first kickoff of the game, right down the field. The Chiefs go 3-and-out. They're already in field goal range. They're up 3-0.
Yeah.
Every team makes mistakes against them, kind of except the Bills. Week 11, the Bills just didn't make any mistakes. There was a turnover for the Bills, but the Bills forced two on them. Yeah. And ultimately, they win by 9.
Well, and that right again there is like it's winning the turnover battle. Like that has kind of proven this season for, if you look at any winning team, not just the Bills, but any winning team, winning the turnover battle this year more than any other, I think, has really been an indication of how that game is going to go. If you win the turnover battle, you're probably going to win it. And that's kind of the case for most situations, but it feels more evident this year. And I don't really know why that is, but it feels like that's just kind of how you know who's going to win the game. And I think also, like, going back to your point about the way these two teams play now, like, because they play very similar styles, even though it seems like, you know, the Bills had this whole everybody eats mantra, the Chiefs kind of have that too. I mean, yes, they throw to Travis Kelce primarily, but they also have a resurgence from Kareem Hunt.
Yep.
For whatever reason.
Worthy's doing work.
Worthy. They have DeAndre Hopkins. Mm-hmm. They have now Hollywood Brown is back.
Like Noah Gray, they're back.
Noah
tight
Gray.
End.
Yep. They have all these different guys that they trust with the ball. And you could, if you don't believe me, you can listen this morning. Carrington Harrison was on with Jeremy and Joe. He said the same thing. There's like 5, 6, 7 guys that they all trust in the offense to go and do what they need to do. And if you look at the Bills, that's the same thing.
They're like such similar teams.
It's built the exact same way. Every single time they face each other, they've both been built the same way. Sure, there's been injuries and things in previous matchups, like last year especially with the Bills. They were down to A.J. Klein and rookie Dorian Williams.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at their rosters on paper for every single one of these playoff matchups, they're built very, very similarly. And I think what's different now is, yes, you can still make those crazy plays. Yes, you still believe in those quarterbacks to do what they do on a consistent basis. But it's like you said, they don't have to do that. But that threat is still there.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like before it was, well, we have to protect from Allen throwing the ball and Allen running the ball. Like, okay, that's two things. Let's handle those two things. That's a lot, but we can try to do it. Now it's, we don't know what's game plan for because Allen can do all those things, but he's not doing them. So let's plan for everything else. And oh crap, there he goes. He's running again. Great.
And then you know, like James Cook, Ty Johnson, and Ray Davis are getting the ball running, or getting the ball going. Mm-hmm. The offensive line, the offensive line for the Bills has never been better.
If you could give out an MVP to a position, it would be the Bills' offensive line.
Yeah.
I mean, they have been the biggest reason why this rushing game for the Bills has kind of found legs. Out of nowhere, like the Bills have had good running games in the past few years, but it's never been the star of the show like it has been this past month or so.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the past month, obviously, like Allen is still the forefront of the team, but when you think of like what's the next best offensive output, it's James Cook, and it's honestly just the trio of them, but James Cook kind of takes precedence because he's RB1.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so interesting to see how quickly this running game has turned around this season. And kind of just come to life and been such a big part of their offense, where it kind of hasn't been in recent years, especially with the guys they have in there. And that's no disrespect to the three guys they have in there, but when you think of like the best rushing teams in the NFL, you think of who has Christian McCaffrey, who has Derrick Henry, who has Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
But the Bills have been the most effective with their kind of run by committee thing here. And I think that's something that we've never seen in a matchup between the Bills and the Chiefs before. Every other matchup, it's been, okay, let's see if Allen can outgun Mahomes. And for most of them, he has been able to, or he's been able to at least keep pace. But now you add in the new element of, if this running game can keep going, what is that going to make the Chiefs do? Are the Chiefs going to be able to do the same things they've always done? Is that going to change how they attack the Bills?
And then you even look at that too, like it's going to change up how we attack the Bill or how the Chiefs will attack the Bills. Look at the injuries for both these teams as well in their Week 11 matchup. We talked a lot about it with Bills, Ravens, Week 4. You know, Taron Johnson, Terrell Bernard, Matt Milano, all out. And it was a big storyline, rightfully so. You look at the Chiefs game and who is missing for the Bills, it's another run of like, okay, like there are key guys. One guy who did play, Amari Cooper, has a cast on his hand due to his wrist injury. Then the rest of the guys that are missing, you're looking at Matt Milano still out, Spencer Brown, who
forgot about that.
Who is, he may not be an all-pro right tackle. He's an elite right tackle.
He's closing in on all-pro. Next
year is going to be a fun year for him, I think.
Yeah.
I think accolades-wise, especially the Bills' offensive line the last month or so has now become like a unit that it seems like everyone in the media that studies film talks about how elite they are. I think he's going to have a nice season next year. Kincaid, out. Keon Coleman, out. And then we mentioned Amari Cooper is playing with a cast on his wrist.
Yeah, so he can't really like full go sort of thing.
It's just they had a number of injuries in key spots, and they still put up 30 on a defense in the Kansas City Chiefs that didn't let up 30 all but once in 2 years.
Yeah. By the way, don't forget, Spencer Brown signed a new contract at the beginning of the season for 4 years. So he's locked up for 4 more years, which...
It's such a bargain.
It's so good.
Such a bargain.
Such a good move that, in hindsight, obviously, like, you know, I'm glad it worked out the way it did because that was a big-time deal.
Yep. The Chiefs also had themselves a number of injuries as well. Charles Menehue is really one that I think about a lot that, you know, he was not there for them. But, again, the Bills didn't have... Spencer Brown, Chris Jones was left off the stat sheet in terms of sacks. I think he had like 7 quarterback hurries, though, so he was still very much active.
But I think that's an important thing to note, too, because even with Spencer Brown out, Chris Jones still did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That's such a key victory for that offensive line when they were hurt, and now if you can keep that going, it's kind of going to show you what's coming for the Chiefs' defensive line.
Yeah.
I really think that... As much as Chris Jones is that X factor, I think he can be easily shut down once again, especially with a healthy offensive line.
Got the healthy offensive line. It's just I think really, and we're talking Sal at 11:30, it really is just to see where some of these injuries are at. Mm-hmm. Benford, Milano question mark. We actually don't really know.
Yeah, that one's super weird. Like,
and then Rapp, who is day-to-day, we knew that on Monday that he was going to be day-to-day. If he's like limited this afternoon in a walkthrough, I think it's a really good sign for him.
Yeah.
Benford, concussion protocol, you have no idea how that's going to go. Every player is different. It doesn't even really matter on the hit. Every player is just different. But right now, without knowing anything there, I said it yesterday. I'm going to keep saying it, you know, probably the rest of this week until I am proven otherwise. I'm so confident for this matchup because I think they got through the team they did not match up well against. And they played them incredibly well. They forced them into mistakes. Sure, did a little luck play into it? Sure. But you kind of make your own luck. You force them into a bad interception, a bad fumble. You know, sure, Mark Andrews catches that, you know, 2-point conversion. You got 1:30 and 2 timeouts to go score a field goal to win the game as time expires. They're in such a good spot. They're playing good football. And to me, it kind of feels like one of those things, Josh, where, look, I think eventually a team will three-peat a Super Bowl. Maybe not in our lifetimes, but as long as the NFL's going, I imagine it will some point happen because it's happened in, what, every other sport? I think. At some point it has.
I don't know. When did it happen in the MLB? Like way back.
I mean, the Yankees.
Like when it was like, but yeah, but that was when players were barely wearing baseball gloves. Like,
it's fair.
Like, but you also, I mean, let's think. NBA, yes.
Mm-hmm.
NHL, yes. Yeah, I mean, out of the four majors, like, it's the only one that doesn't have one.
Yeah. So I think eventually it'll happen.
Yeah. You even have it in, like, the Premier League, which has a lot of parity, too. Like, there's leagues around the world that have tons of parity, and you still have dynasties establishing. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the one thing that's, I think, always interesting about the NFL. And now, if we can get to the point where it's kind of, you know, different Super Bowl teams every year rather than just seeing the Chiefs again and again and again, that would be great. But that's kind of the best thing about the NFL is you always get a different winner, or at least, you know, usually...
It feels like it.
Yeah, you usually do anyway.
But it's just... They don't feel the same. Yes, this is actually the most wins they've had in a regular season under Andy Reid with 15.
Mm-hmm.
They don't feel the same. It feels like the Bills do have their number. And to be perfectly honest, they are due to beat them in the playoffs.
Right.
They beat them enough in the regular season. You've handled them. You know you can handle Arrowhead. We talked about that yesterday where the last three games they played at Arrowhead, not 13 seconds, they've won. Because they played in Arrowhead twice in 2021. They won in the regular season. They lost in the playoffs. So it's not like that stadium, that crowd, has got your number where it's like, you got to get them at high mark. No, it's actually been quite the opposite. It's just, as long as they're not injured to hell, as long as we don't get news today that Matt Milano, you know, tore his pec, he's out for the playoffs, Christian Benford, you know, concussion doesn't go anywhere, I think they'll be fine. And you look at that matchup as well in week 11, we talk a lot about Travis Kelce and stopping him. They did a really good job. 4 targets, 2 catches, 8 yards. That was his stat line in week 11. Now, sure, they've added Hopkins. They've got Hollywood Brown. Worthy's kind of come along, so there might be a little bit of a difference. Houston played him really well.
Yeah. And if it wasn't for a missed field goal and a missed extra point, it would have been closer on the scoreboard. I mean, that's 4 points that you're missing off that scoreboard. Makes it a lot different of a game when you look at it from a box score perspective.
Oh, yeah.
And even when you're watching the game itself, it was still like very much so, hey, the Texans are kind of threatening here. Like it's not all that far apart. These two teams were very close together still. So it's something where, like you said, the Bills do feel like they have their number when it comes to the Chiefs. But I feel like that number is different now, right? Like every year it's been changing and to be fair, both teams have changed every single year. They've changed with each other, kind of.
The like, Tyreek Hill trade, the Stephon Diggs trade. The Bills have
just
kind
been like
a little bit
year
behind.
Or two behind each other. But now it feels like they're basically the same.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said before, they're kind of matched up in the whole everybody eats concept. It's just not as talked about in Kansas City. It's not as big of a deal. It's not as much of a focus point. But if you look at their two defenses, they both at one point had a – impressive or, you know, top or whatever you want, like a top cornerback, Tyrann Mathieu and Tre'Davious White. It's kind of both gone by the wayside now, obviously, as they've aged.
And now it's McDuffie and Benford.
Yeah. And then they've also both had good defensive lines the whole time with Chris Jones, Ed Oliver, even, you know, Von Miller at certain points and Charles Omenihu. Like there's very clear parallels every single year between these two teams. I think that there's a difference in the way the Bills are playing this year, even though they have the same type of personnel. The way the Bills have been playing the past month, I think, gives them the edge this weekend. Like I said before, with that running game, I really think that adds a different spin than it has in years past. Because before, like I said, it's just been Allen and Mahomes duking it out. Now you kind of put the ball in other people's hands and really give them the chance to show the Chiefs, this is a completely different team. You have no idea what to do.
Yeah, and when you do look at these two offenses, that I think is the big difference. The Chiefs don't really have a second option past Mahomes working magic. They really don't.
Their run game is Kelce.
But he's part of the receiving game, or he's part of the
passing
game.
Oh, you're part of the magic. Okay, I see what you're saying.
They don't have really a run game going.
Yeah.
Kareem Hunt is kind of better than Isaiah Pacheco. Neither of them necessarily are really all that good.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bills, for a drive, couldn't just go to the run game. I mean, going against the third best run rush defense in the playoffs and the first best rush defense in the playoffs, they were able to run the ball. They had full on drives where they just decided, nope, that's what we're going to do and we're going to score.
Mm-hmm.
The Chiefs don't have that option. And I think that might be a key to this, where I think the strategy is going to be somewhat similar in this aspect to the Baltimore game, which is just limit their possessions.
Yeah.
You know, keep the ball as long as you can. It's not going to be the Denver game, where you had like 45 minutes of possession. It's not going to be that. But I think that's still going to be the game plan of just limit possessions, limit mistakes, get out of here. just get out of here with a win. It's not going to be flashy. It's not going to be sexy. But I think that is the right thing to do in these matchups.
At this point, though, who cares what the win looks like?
I don't.
Like, you could win the game 17-10, and I'd be over the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I don't care if you don't score more than 20 points. If you win the game and have more points than the other team at the end of the game, that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, that's where I'm at with this rivalry, I guess, if you want to call it that. Because not that I don't like calling it a rivalry, but it's just like...
It totally is.
Well,
it's basically a divisional rivalry at this
right,
point.
But rivalries, sure, you have teams going back and forth winning the other game, but you never have the one team winning more of the important games. Because that's the thing that it feels like, is like, it's always the Bills are winning the regular season, but the Chiefs win the more important one. That's like, and it does ignite the rivalry more, but that's where I'm like, it's not a rivalry because you're losing, you're not winning the important game much.
For me, it's totally there. I think it's there. That's the frustrating part, is that they're winning the more important ones, but the Bills are winning games still. It's not like it's six in a row, seven
in a row.
It's
not like the Patriots rivalry where it's like, we just hate you because you're beating us.
Or like currently the Dolphins one where like, we hate each other, but like Dolphins maybe win a game before you talk smack.
Right.
Like win a game.
But that's kind of how it's starting to feel when it comes to the playoff part of it, because that's the point that you've gotten to every single year, except for the Bengals year, obviously. But every year it's gotten to that point and it's just... fallen flat. And I don't want to sound like a Debbie Downer when I say that, because I do feel like it's very different this year. I feel like the way they're constructed and the way they've been playing and game planning is so much different this year. But I really just need to see it. That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
I just need to see it happen, and then I will kind of change
my
tune.
It was sort of the same in week 11. You know, that was my feeling, where I had stopped being as excited for the regular season matchup because you kind of anticipated they were going to win it.
Mm-hmm.
It was the playoff matchup. Now, we didn't know that the Bills Chiefs were definitively going to play each other in the playoffs. The Chiefs weren't playing great football. There was a feeling for a few weeks there. I know I was definitely on that, where it was like, whoever they're playing, divisional round, wild card round, doesn't matter. They're losing. Like, that, they look like the 2020 Steelers and some of those other bad great teams that we were all talking about. It didn't happen, and they are playing each other. And now it feels like, Ross Tucker was on with Shulman the Bulldog yesterday, and it feels like it's time. It's time for you to finally get over the hump. Steve Young in 94 with the 49ers finally did it. Peyton Manning in 06 with the Colts finally did it. It's time. They are playing incredibly efficient and well-executed football. It's time. And they're playing a team in the Chiefs that, while yes, has kind of been your boogeyman, is not playing particularly good football. We went through the stats with Houston. They ultimately won the game, but not only were they outgained, everyone in the divisional round that lost was outgained. Everyone in the divisional round that won was outgained. But it was more, you didn't even win the turnover battle. You didn't even win the third down battle, Josh. Let me get those numbers for you here, because that's maybe the most surprising thing going back to that Week 11 matchup. That was something that we talked about a lot, how good the Chiefs were at converting on third downs. They were close to, I think, 50%, and they were first in the league. They've ultimately finished second in the league. You look at the stats, though, for this. They went 4 of 11 on third down against Houston. I mean, there's a lot of stuff you look at with that Houston game and go, how did they win it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's maybe the most important thing for me. And ultimately, kind of a topic we'll kind of throw around there today. We tweeted it out as well. The Bills' defense, and you can maybe argue even the Bills this year, have really lived off of turnovers. It makes me uncomfortable because they're not, quote-unquote, sustainable. They don't carry over from year to year. And so it does make me a little uncomfortable. But the Bills have been able to force teams into turnovers. But in this matchup with the Chiefs, do they need to force turnovers to win these games, to win this matchup? I don't think so. I don't think the Bills do need to do that. I think they can, and I think they'll at least get one. They've seemingly just been able to put themselves in position to do so. But when I look at the Bills to the Chiefs, the Bills are playing better football right now. They're beating better opponents. Houston limped into the playoffs and was battling you like hell. Denver, you could argue, kind of limped in the playoffs. The Bills blew them out.
Mm-hmm.
Baltimore, arguably playing the best football of anybody and was not turning the ball over. You forced three turnovers, you beat them. You got rid of maybe the best team in the playoffs. They are playing at such a high level right now, top to bottom. I don't think they need turnovers to win this game. I do think they'll potentially get one or two, but I don't think they need them. I just don't. Not with the way they're playing and not with the way the Chiefs are playing. I can't wait. 803-0550, the number to call. Mark, we'll get to your call after a quick timeout. at 11 o'clock. Aaron Quinn, Cover One, will join the show, kind of help us dive more into this matchup, what he saw against Baltimore, and, you know, kind of what he has seen so far now with the Chiefs. We'll also be joined by Sal Capaccio at 11:30. The Bills do return to practice today, albeit in a walkthrough, but could give us a little bit of a inclination on what is going on with some of the injured players, Christian Benford, Matt Milano, Taylor Rapp, and potentially others as well. Zach Jones and Josh Mint here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
It's playoff football, right? And it's cold outside, you know, the weather. And the field sometimes aren't on just great terms with the footing. And you need to be able to be a physical football team and be able to establish the line of scrimmage. And I'm fortunate for the offensive line that we have, that, you know, the trust that I have in them and our backs understanding. And it always points to the offensive line, but the wide receivers and the tight ends that we have in the running game that are doing all the selfish work. And it's critical. And again, whether it works or not, it's the confidence and the trust in them that they're out there doing it and they're feeling it and they're understanding how the blocks are approaching it. And that communication, that trust in them, like, we've gotten to this point because of our guys and the trust that we have in them, and that can't change.
Bills offense coordinator Joe Brady. I liked what he said there at the start, too, that maybe gets lost a little bit because a lot of us saw it as an advantage for the Bills, especially when Baltimore Ravens special teams coordinator, I'm blanking on the gentleman's name, but was incorrect in saying that they had, or that the Bills have a heated field. They don't. And so the field conditions were not great.
I think Chris Horton.
Chris Horton, thank you. And I think that ultimately did affect the Bills' offense as well, where it was like, you know, we can't really pass as much as we'd like to. You can't really make a lot of cuts.
But
and that was an issue.
You did see Lamar Jackson falling down on two sacks. Well, actually, one sack, one fumble.
Yep.
Like, the sack, he fell down, and Greg Rousseau just comes over and taps him. And then the fumble, he kind of like...
It's a bad snap. He has to jump up and get it, but then he sort of...
stumbles and loses the ball. So
field conditions kind of go both ways on that.
But it's just the Bills are used to that. Like the Bills are used to playing in that, so you didn't really see many mistakes from them, if any.
Some head coaching news in the NFL. Not a hiring, but a coordinator taking himself out of a job. Buccaneers offense coordinator Liam Cohen removing himself from consideration for the Jacksonville Jaguars head coaching position. It seemed like he was like the definitive favorite for the position. He's now going to instead stay in Tampa Bay. Look, Jacksonville, I feel for the fans. Everyone said if you kept Trent Baalke, you would limit what you could get in the head coaching market.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Ben Johnson's gone. Aaron Glenn hasn't even thought of you. I mean, maybe you go Mike McCarthy. I can't imagine they go from Doug Peterson to Mike McCarthy. I don't even think McCarthy would be necessarily a bad hire. He's just not very sexy. But, I mean, this is what it is. And Jordan Schultz tweets this out as well. It's been no secret around the NFL since the season ended. The Jaguars have a hard time attracting a top head coach if they kept Trent Baalke. They suck with him, and here we are.
Yeah.
It's not hard. It's not hard.
But they also – the Jaguars did say, if you come in there – if you go in there and you say, hey, let's fire Trent Baalke if I become head coach – they would be, like, okay with it.
Yeah, Sean Conn even kind of mentioned, like, if a candidate came in, it was basically like, I need to bring my own guy in.
Yeah, they'd be fine with it.
He would be receptive to it.
Okay. Well, that's – all right.
But I think I think a lot of coaches look at that and go, then why are you keeping him?
What
kind of shop are you running here?
Yeah, that kind of shows, like, potential issues down the road. And it's just – it is kind of crazy, too, like, seeing – there's still five head coaching vacancies because Aaron Glenn did, in fact, leave New York.
Yeah, that was a little surprising.
After the Jets were like, hey, we're not letting him leave the building. And he was just like, okay, let me take your private jet back to Detroit.
It was a little he's apparently got a meeting with New Orleans either. I think it's actually been moved to next week due to the weather in New Orleans.
Oh, okay.
But that was a little surprising. I expected him to stay in New York and take the job. I really did expect Woody Johnson to be like, no, no. That's our guy, and we'll go on from there.
Well, the Jets did say it's his job if he wants it.
I know, but you let him leave the room.
Yeah.
That's my thing. You let him leave.
I just think it is kind of crazy, though. There's still five spots open. Like, I wonder, though, like, at this point, who goes where? Because Mike McCarthy's still out there. And Joe Brady's technically still out there.
I think McCarthy's going to get a job. I just assumed he was going to go to the Bears because every report was Ben Johnson's going to the Raiders, and then it was like, nope, he's going to the Bears. I mean, that's the Raiders' job. I think once the Ben Johnson stuff cooled down, because he obviously takes the Bears job, mm-hmm. you very much quickly see, oh, they've got nothing there. Listening to the Colin Cowherd, John Middlecoff podcast too, something that's not brought up a lot, you know, because we were all talking about, you know, Brady's selling him a pitch and stuff like that. And, oh, it's tampering. And it is. I don't disagree. Brady doesn't live in Vegas.
Yeah.
He lives in Florida. So whatever his pitch is, cool. I'm still working every day with Mark Davis. I'm not working with you, Tom.
Yeah, it's not
you're
like Tom Brady's
here in
there.
The building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So whatever your pitch is nice. It's great. You're a good salesman. You watched a few episodes of Mad Men. Good for you. But you're not here. So I think that pitch kind of loses its luster like the second you get on the private jet to go home, where you're like, this is what Tom's going to do every day. What the hell?
Yeah.
This is not right.
Right.
So I think that job lost a lot of its luster, I think, immediately, probably for someone like Ben Johnson. He, you know, stays in the division. He knows the division. I also don't think the Bears are a particularly untalented football team. Jacksonville, I would say the same thing. I think the problem, though, is with both Jacksonville and Chicago, it's bad ownership. And the ownership is keeping – with Jacksonville, the ownership is keeping a notoriously bad and very political GM that makes it uncomfortable to work around. And that's where there are. I simply don't understand keeping Trent Baalke. And you almost got to feel bad for Baalke in that sense too, knowing around the NFL, people don't want you in your job.
Mm-hmm.
Real quick though, we want to get to your phone calls here coming up in just a moment. But you know, now looking at this, Liam Cohen felt like the guy that was going to get the job. They're going to have to go on a plan B, maybe even C. How quick before they get to Joe Brady and offering him a contract? Especially,
and that's not
let's
just
say
for
the
Jaguars.
Bills.
That's for any team.
It's for the Raiders. It's for the Saints.
Yeah.
Technically the Jets. I mean, Aaron
and
Lenz,
the Cowboys, too.
Well, the Cowboys are kind of doing their own thing, which is weird.
I know. They're probably going to get Kellen Moore. I mean, that's the other thing, too. How much of this is kind of getting held up because teams are still in the playoffs, right? Like, is anyone out there looking at Cliff Kingsbury still and hoping?
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, that is that still have any legs?
There was a hope they could interview him. They're like, oh, damn. All right, you're still playing.
Yeah, right. And then, obviously, like I just said, with Kellen Moore, with the Eagles, they're still in it. So it's like, is there anyone out there still that is getting attention? They just haven't gotten the full attention yet because they're still in the playoffs.
I would have said, I was almost definitive on it like 2 or 3 weeks ago. I didn't think Joe Brady was leaving. But with that, with Cohen now taking himself out of the Jaguars job, I'm less so on it. Especially if the Bills were to go on and win the Super Bowl or even just make the Super Bowl, you could argue, Brady, in your first full year, you took Allen to a different level. He took the Bills offense to a different level. And he took him to a spot they'd never been.
Yeah. It's also funny. I'm looking at like a list from like right at the beginning of the season of, or maybe it was in the offseason, of guys that could be good head coaches for next year.
Mm-hmm.
So like right now. And
Liam Cohen's
on there. Ben Johnson's on there. It's just kind of funny. Robert Saleh's on there. Like,
yeah.
It is kind of funny, like, seeing how much this has all changed, but also how much is still staying the same. Like,
mm-hmm.
like Arthur Smith is on this list. He's technically still out there, like, as a potential.
Pittsburgh's OC, yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Like what if...
I mean, if you hired him, I would genuinely discuss.
Yeah.
Like, if you hired him as your head coach to my favorite football team, I would genuinely think about changing allegiances.
Oh, yeah, for sure, obviously. But, again, there are names out there that are very uninspiring that teams probably will hire. Like, there's guys that – like, look at Mike McCarthy, right? Like, I understand that everything that went wrong in Dallas wasn't necessarily all on him. But you got to look at that situation, and there's definitely a good chunk of it that's on him, right? Like,
yeah.
Obviously, there's, like, all the questions with Dak, and then Jerry Jones takes a forefront of everything just because of all of his decisions.
Kind of wants to.
Well, that too. But – I do look at that whole situation and I say, yeah, but Mike McCarthy was also kind of part of the problem.
I think he's part of the problem. I don't hate McCarthy as much as I maybe used to.
No, but
I think he's a good NFL head coach.
Right.
I don't think he's great. I don't think he's terrible. I think he's solid.
Yeah, he's a little bit above average. But that's like he's like on the bottom of that tier of, like, if you hire him, I will be very upset.
I mean, to a certain extent, he's sort of like the Dak Prescott of coaches.
he's
wildly different personalities. I'm not saying that, but, like, in terms of, like, I mean, yeah, you could win a Super Bowl. Everything's got to go right.
Right. Everything in the world has to go correct. Yeah, right.
Mm. 803-0550, the number to call if you want to join the show with us. And let's get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We start today with Mark on the line. Mark, how are we doing this morning?
I'm freezing, man. I don't know about you guys. My God.
Yeah, dude, right there with you, man.
It is cold.
36 is going to feel like 80 degrees down there.
It's golf weather, baby.
But, the topic of conversation right now, I hope Joe Brady really takes the route of Ben Johnson, only because it's, you know, likely it's going to be his last go-around for head coaching job. And you're Josh Allen's offensive coordinator. I mean, that's, you could be the next Ben Johnson next year. Why leave? But that's not the reason for my call. I wanted to talk about Cole Bishop, and I'm just looking for that standout game. And what a better – there's not a better time than this coming Sunday. Brandon Bean brought him in here because Kincaid said that, you know, he took it to me in practice. I feel like he could he's got the size to hopefully jam Kelce up at the line, and then that helps with the run game. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what they have planned. I think either with or without Taylor Rapp, that he could play a factor, and I really hope he does. But I'm happy to listen to you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Mark, thanks for the call, brother. I want Cole Bishop to work so bad.
Me too.
And the only problem with him has been that DeMar Hamlin and Taylor Rapp both have been like very serviceable. And, mm-hmm. and I don't mean that yeah. negatively. I mean, like, they've both just been pretty darn good safeties.
Yeah.
There's been no reason to throw Bishop in there. Now, if Taylor Rapp can't go, sure, you get there with Bishop. I don't necessarily know if he's got to be like somebody that like shuts down Kelce or anything like that. I like what they have with the linebackers in covering. They have very athletic linebackers. Milano's always done a pretty darn good job on Kelce when he's been able to play and be healthy.
Bernard did a great job on Andrews.
Yep. Dorian Williams as well. Mm-hmm. We're going to see him play. And then, well, the last time that they played the Chiefs, Week 11 without Milano, they held Noah Gray to under 40 yards and they held Kelce under 10 yards.
Yeah, right. Like, I was just about to say that too. Like, if you look at what Bernard and Williams were able to do against Kelce last time out, it was very unlike a – it was not a Kelce game, right? Like, they held him to, what was it, like a catch or two
mm-hmm.
and maybe like 8 yards. So if you can eliminate him, yes, Noah Gray is still an option for them, but I'm much less scared of Noah Gray than I am Travis Kelce. With Cole Bishop, like, you know, kind of sizing him up with Travis Kelce – he's about 50 pounds lighter and 3 inches shorter. So mm-hmm. he is,
it's a matchup nightmare.
I was going to say, is that significantly smaller to you, or does that not matter because maybe Bishop can be more athletic? Right?
It's a little bit of a nightmare, matchup nightmare.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was thinking too. But at the same time, he kind of goes in the same category as that athletic linebacker. He seems to be, again, this is his rookie year, so it's a little early on in the process, but mm-hmm. Bishop seems to be that more athletic sort of safety that can make plays that you wouldn't expect him to. And that's something that I would look for a few years down the road, maybe not so much in his rookie season.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of what we thought about with Dorian Williams last year, and look at him now. It took him a year to kind of get his legs to really showcase that athletic ability.
Yep. Let's take one more call here before our next timeout. Steven on the line. Steven, how are we doing this morning?
Hey, good morning. First of all, I wanted to say, boy, it's a balmy 42 degrees here compared to you guys.
Uh-huh. Summer right there.
I grew up in Buffalo, and just looking at the temperature there, it makes me chill. What I wanted to say about this game coming up, okay, contrasting. Now, you look at this past Sunday, it's obvious the focus of the Bills was they knew they had to have a big game defensively. And the difference was the takeaways, what they were the kings of during the season. They had to stop Henry, which they did, even though he had a great run there in the third quarter and then in the fourth quarter, but they still stopped him in essence. And then, of course, Lamar. Now, with this game coming up, after refer back to the 11th week where the Bills beat the Chiefs by 10 points, 31-21, and, you know, the thing is, they did have a great game defensively because at that point in the season, Mahomes was the most intercepted quarterback in the league, and they picked him off twice, once at the beginning.
Oh, we lost Steven. On that point, though, I like that he brought up, though, that Mahomes was the most picked off quarterback for a good bit of the first half of the year. I mean, that was sort of the story. They haven't turned the ball over since week 11. That was the last time they've turned the ball over.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I wanted to bring up the idea of, like, do you need turnovers to beat them? Because they haven't done it since you guys last played. Now, maybe you got the secret sauce, you can get them. I don't know. I mean, the Bills have been living off those all year, and it kind of just refused to go away. But you were living off those. And now the Chiefs since then have not turned the ball over. They haven't been playing perfect by any means, but they don't turn the ball over. It's going to be such a fascinating matchup. I can't wait to see Andy Reid versus Sean McDermott and Bobby Babich, Joe Brady versus Spagnuolo. It's going to be an awesome, awesome matchup to see what they can do, because neither of these teams turn the ball over. And arguably the last time they did, I mean, the Bills had a third and 16, like arm punt is one of their turnovers, but one of their last was also week 11. Allen had an interception against Kansas City as well. They do not turn the ball over. And it's so fun to see the chess match that's going to go on between these two teams. 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here until 12 o'clock. Coming up in just about 15 minutes, Aaron Quinn of Cover One will join the show, help us break down what he has seen so far in this matchup and where the Bills can maybe exploit this seemingly just insurmountable task that is beating the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. The Buffalo Sabres got a win last night when a lot of people were asleep. They played the Vancouver Canucks last night, 10 p.m. start time. I did not stay up for it, but they did get a 3-2 win. Yuri Kulik, 3 points last night in one of his recent returns from IR. Was that his second game returning from IR?
Yes.
I think so.
But multi-point
yes,
game.
Yes, yes.
Love to see it. And he was really good on the faceoffs.
3 points for him, 2 points for Donnelly, the other two goal scorers, J.J. Paterka and Tage Thompson. They're next back in action on Thursday, still out west against Calgary. 18-24-5. The season's over. I mean, I don't want to sound negative. We're talking Bills AFC Championship, but like, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough to look at.
Those two franchises could not be further apart.
It is wild, the contrast. I mean, is there any city
not be further apart?
Is there any city that has two teams that are further apart?
Nope, all the Chicago teams are terrible.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of all the bad teams, cuz like and the good ones too. I mean, the Flyers and the Eagles maybe, but the Flyers aren't that bad.
Yeah.
The Flyers are like average right now. Like, they're like middle of the standings.
Yep. Well, and also you got to look too, like, how good one team is and how bad another. I think that's why. Is like the Bills are one of the four favorites to win the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
The Sabres can't make the playoffs in a league that almost everyone makes the playoffs.
Maybe Dallas, because the Stars are good, but
Dallas in the playoffs though last year.
Yeah, you
could argue Dak got hurt, and that's a big reason why.
Jets and Rangers. Well, actually, the Rangers are bad this year.
The Rangers are bad. That's why I was like, did I miss something where the Rangers got good?
I forgot.
The Knicks.
The Rangers are bad.
The Knicks
this year
are like third in the Eastern
Conference.
Yeah, that's
true. Okay, yeah. I didn't think about we got to think
I feel
about
like you can't
too
put New York teams in this conversation too because many. There's too many of
yeah
them.
Unless yeah you're talking about like the ones that purely play in New York.
Just not the football teams.
Not the football teams. They don't count. You could talk about them with the Devils, though.
I mean, you could say like you could say Columbus with the Blue Jackets and the Buckeyes.
I'm the Buckeyes.
Yeah,
that's pretty good actually.
I mean, one of them just won a national championship. You can't get much better than that.
No, that's tough. Yeah, no, I don't think there's a bigger gap between two professional sports teams in the same city.
Panthers, Dolphins. Miami's close to Sunrise, right? How close are they?
I think they're pretty close. But again, I mean, the Dolphins are like an okay team. They're not a disaster.
Yeah, that's fair. They
were in the playoffs last year.
Yeah, but
they're close to imploding. Don't get me wrong. They're close to imploding. But they're not totally there yet.
They're closing in on it.
They're closing in.
I want that to be it because I would love for the Dolphins to be in this conversation. Oh, yeah. Miami and Sunrise, Florida are like right next to each other.
Yeah. We'll revisit this next year to see if the Dolphins and the Panthers can be combined into this. 803-0550, the number to call if you want to join the show today. Coming up in about 5 minutes, Aaron Quinn of Cover One is going to join the show to talk a little bit on Bills Chiefs, Bills Ravens as well, what he's seen in these matchups. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
I think it really is remarkable that Josh has gone from a player that was known for chaos and he's gone into control, a player that was known for reckless and he's gone into just aggression, a player that at times early on was careful and now he's just really smart with the football. And no, he wasn't remarkable when it came to the statistical performance, but in reality, the difference to the game is one team took care of the football in an incredibly high level, yeah, and one team didn't. And to beat an all-time great offense with the number one ranked defense, and that's who Baltimore was, that's what was going to be necessary. They called it and they executed it that way.
There's ESPN's Dan Orlovsky talking about the Bills' game plan against the Baltimore Ravens, how it went down. Looking at the tape, the Bills played it exactly how they wanted to, and Josh, they've just become such a physical team up front on that offensive line. They are deliberate in everything they do. I talked a lot about that with Detroit, where kind of anything you see on the field on their offense, they meant you to see it. It's sort of the same thing with the Bills. It seems like everything they do, it's meant to happen. Such a well-coached team. Brady's doing well. Aaron Kromer on that offensive line, what a get he has been for the Bills in that offensive line. Spencer Brown and Deion Dawkins both have flourished and two of the best tackles in the NFL. We're going to get more on both, of course, that Baltimore Ravens matchup, how the Bills got to win, but also, of course, it is AFC Championship week. The Bills are back in the AFC Championship for the first time since 2020. It's eerily similar how they've gotten there. Joining us now on the Western Hotline, Cover One's Aaron Quinn joins us. Aaron, have you thought about that much? How, like, they got to the AFC Championship playing the exact same team to then play the exact same team. It just I only realized that the night it happened. It sat with me a little weird.
Yeah, I didn't really think about that till you just said it, but it makes sense. History sort of repeats itself. Hopefully, the Bills can control a little bit more of their destiny and rewrite the narrative here going against KC. I saw an interesting one about how many times it took Manning to overcome the Patriots, and I think that is one of these sort of interesting narratives when, you know, they lose to the Chiefs so many times in a row here. There's a lot of these in sports history, whether it was Jordan versus the Pistons, Manning versus the Patriots. It's a narrative until it's overcome, and hopefully this is the year they overcome it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And another one that I hadn't thought of in a long time, too, was Steve Young and the 49ers over the Cowboys. You know, it's everywhere in every sport. Football is kind of famous for them, too. And it's not like a scientific thing to say, but for me, where I'm sitting here Wednesday at, what are we, at 11 in the morning, I feel really good about this matchup, Aaron. I didn't think they matched up particularly well against Baltimore, and yet they got past them. I thought they always matched up better with Kansas City, and here we go.
Yeah, I was a little overly nervous, I think, even in the wild card matchup of just like, hey, this is a weird one that could be a trap game for the Bills if they don't come to play. And then last week I was super nervous. And I was actually texting with your boy Nate Geary last night, and we were talking about this matchup. And not to sound cocky, I just felt less pressure as a fan and a content creator that covers this game of like, I just feel at peace with it. And I don't know if that's because I believe the Bills are going to win or just I feel confident in the style of football they're playing, that they won't get raced in this game, that even if this is a close game, they're not going to lose their composure in these moments. You know, McDermott seems looser. So I don't know if it's the vibe around the team or what it is. I can't make it a quantitative thing as to why we feel this way. But Nate and I were both kind of like, yeah, this feels weirdly at peace and calm going into a huge matchup and obviously tons of pressure, right? Because for years since that 2020, we've heard, you know, this is the team, this is the hump, this is what you've built your team to get over as the Kansas City Chiefs. And so you'd think the pressure would be more than what we felt going against Baltimore. And I just don't feel it right now here, like you said, on Wednesday. I'm sure it'll ramp up here as the weekend gets into it and the pressure really ramps up. But right now, I just don't.
Yeah, Saturday night into like Sunday morning is going to be the worst time in the world. I was kind of right there with you, too, where it was like Sunday, I thought once the game kicked off, especially because I worked the games, I thought I was just going to relax. It got worse. I had a stomach ache for like the entire first half. The whole second half, I'm sweating it out. Oh, good time for everybody. You mentioned, though, the style of play that the Bills are playing right now. I find them in Kansas City playing an eerily similar style where they both just don't make mistakes. and assume and or pressure another team into making them and capitalize. It you know, you could argue it's boring or what have you. But Aaron, what have you seen from these two teams where, I mean, the Bills' last turnover was against the Patriots when they were in their red jerseys. The Chiefs' last turnover was against the Bills.
Well, one, I know many of you guys over at WGR love golf analogies when we're talking sports, and the best golf is boring golf, right? It's not having double bogeys and worse. And that's really how the Bills are playing right now. And similar how the Kansas City Chiefs has had success. When they beat Baltimore in the postseason, it was, hey, allow them to hit doubles and triple bogeys, and we're just going to get pars and bogeys, and we're going to find our way down the field. And that's maybe my biggest concern about this game is the way both teams play, if they're playing their style, especially offensively. And we know the Bills' defense is vulnerable to some of those long drives. They are going to give up some third downs. They are going to let a team move up and down the field on them a little bit. Not necessarily by design, but it's just something that is happening. That could be a game that just really limits possessions. And we saw what benefited the Bills was the turnovers against Baltimore. Whether people want to argue they were forced or unforced, it doesn't matter. They still turned the ball over, which gave the Bills some extra possessions. You also got the extra possession at half. I know there's a lot of conversation about, you know, should the Bills take the ball first and try to, you know, flip the game script, but that extra possession at half still helps. You know, they didn't get the double dip, but having the ability in those types of games to steal a possession matters. And so that is probably my biggest concern, is this could be one of those games where, you know, each team maybe gets a possession the way they like to drive down the field and put together 10-plus play drives, and they're happy to do it, and they both want to keep the opposing quarterback off the field. And that could be a game that goes quick, that feels stressful, that maybe feels a little closer than it needs to be. And while I'm confident in the Bills, the Chiefs just find ways to win these close one-possession games. And so if it comes down to the fourth quarter and it's a one-possession game, I am not going to feel as good as I feel right here on Wednesday for sure.
So, Aaron, looking at the Chiefs specifically, like, I saw your tweet yesterday talking about how basically the last month for Kansas City has not really been meaningful games up until the playoff game. And even in that, Houston was a team that kind of limped into the playoffs. Like, how do you look at what Kansas City has shown us since that Week 11 game against the Bills and just kind of almost just sort of like preview what's going to happen here this Sunday? Because this Chiefs team has changed a lot since that Week 11 matchup, but the Bills have changed as well.
Yeah, and so we do a post-game show or a preview show here this week, and normally when I get into a team for a preview, you know, I start about 4 weeks back and work my way, because, you know, you can go as far back as you want, but teams change and they evolve, and so I think if you get a month of football, you can get a pretty good trend and idea of what they're doing, where they're at, and you get a decent enough sample of size against different opponents. You can't do that right now with the Kansas City Chiefs, right? Because if you go a month back and you only have one game here, at least with starters and stuff, right? That Broncos game doesn't count. And so it's really difficult. Even the data, I try to follow the data and the trends. It's really difficult to get a pinpoint on who the Kansas City Chiefs are. And you brought it up. I mean, we last week, all we talked about was the regular season matchup between the Bills and the Ravens. And the national media was kind of highlighting that, of like, oh, they killed the Bills that time. But we knew the nuance between that matchup. It wasn't going to be the same matchup. And I think this is the same for Bills and Chiefs on both sides of the ball. There's a lot of nuance of why that game wasn't the same. And even in the historical playing this team, the Bills and Chiefs have played a ton over the last 5-6 years here. And I don't know that you can draw a whole lot. These teams are totally different than they've been in those previous years. And so I personally am having a difficult time sort of getting a read on them. But what we do know, Andy Reid, Steve Spagnuolo, they've been doing this a long time. I think there are some trends. They're going to have tendency breakers that they've been holding on to all year for a game like this. But you mentioned it at the top of this segment before I came on here, what Brady's doing. Even McDermott and Babich, I think there's a lot of narratives out there that McDermott only plays one style of defense. We've seen in the postseason here, wild card, tons of dime look, a lot of nickel, zero base. You go back to this weekend, tons of base, right? Not much nickel, not a lot of dime looks. And so he's really tailoring game plans specific to opponents. And I think that's the game within the game that I'm most interested to see is, we can do all the legwork we want leading up to this thing, but I think a lot of it's going to get thrown out the window because it's going to be so specific to each opponent here.
And it really has been. And going to that, you know, different game plans for different opponents. You look at that Ravens game where I know you guys over Cover One were really fighting the good fight, kind of talking about how, look, the offense sure was not, like, impressive in the second half, but it wasn't like they necessarily, you know, I don't want to say shouldn't have thrown the ball, but their success rates. Eric Turner, I know, has been breaking this down a lot. Their success rates running the ball in the first and second half were still higher than their pass rates. Yeah. But what would you tell people, you know, who are maybe nervous about that offensive production against the Ravens going into this Chiefs game? What would you tell people to maybe kind of give them faith? What have you seen from this team that still gives you hope? Because they are still, I think, the only team outside of, you know, a bunch of backups playing Denver to score 30 points on the Chiefs in the last 2 years.
Yeah, well, so I'm a little torn because I do want to give fans and people hope. I am a little nervous that the offense can't stall out in the ways that they have here in the first two rounds of the postseason, right? Even against the Broncos, that first half was a lot closer than it needed to be. And, I don't think the defense is getting enough credit here for the first two matchups. That was the thing going into this postseason we heard the most about is Sean McDermott's defense can't play in the postseason. And everybody was scared of the Ravens, right? And again, whether or not you believe the turnovers were forced or unforced, they got turnovers. And we heard all year they weren't going to be able to maintain and sustain turnovers. Well, they did, right? And in the first couple of games, I think it's weighed a little heavier towards the defense being getting that, as Bruce Nolan likes to say, plurality pie of who's responsible for the victory. I think defense has kind of held their weight in their end of the bargain here in the first couple of matchups. I don't think you can do that this weekend. I think the offense has to execute at a bit of a higher level. You have to score, and you have to stay ahead of the Kansas City Chiefs and kind of dictate that game script. So I do want to see more from the offense. But like you said, this is the year to really, I think, attack the Kansas City Chiefs. Their defense, I am fearful of Steve Spagnuolo. I think in terms of what he can draw up and mixing coverages and some of the blitz packages that he can get, if you get into the third and long situations, he's just dynamic. But this isn't a defense that necessarily scares me. I know Bills fans are down on the Bills defense. The Bills defense is better than the Kansas City Chiefs defense this year in almost every metric. And when you watch them on film, even that Houston game, you know, Stroud took a lot of bad sacks. Some of them, Kansas City just did a good job getting the rush, but some of them were just bad sacks by C.J. Stroud. But really, their special teams lost that game. I think the offense moved the ball at times, and then they lacked execution. I think that was really probably the biggest issue for the Bills against the Ravens was not the play calling. We always defer to play calling when things don't go wrong. And I know people were frustrated with Brady, but I think the Bills lacked a little bit of execution there towards the end of that game on some of the drives. And if one or two plays, you know, if Dalton Kincaid doesn't slip and he catches that ball from Allen, that drive looks totally different. Some of the success looks totally different, and it's slim margin. So it's all about execution. It's all about fundamentals, but the offense has to tighten up just a little bit on that stuff here as you go forward. You can't make those mistakes. They're not turning the ball over, but they're still not executing at their highest level right now.
So Aaron, with the offense as a whole, I feel like the focal point the past few weeks has been how well the Bills are running the ball. And a lot of that has to do with the offensive line. The first time around these two teams played each other, Spencer Brown wasn't there. Now he's back. And is that going to kind of let the Bills lean more into the running game, or do you think it's going to be a little bit more of a kind of a 50-50 split with running and passing? I mean, with how well they've been running the ball, why would you go away from it, right?
Yeah, I think it needs to be balanced for sure, but I don't want to see them go away from it. And honestly, that was a concern of mine going into the postseason, was the games that I've been most frustrated with the offense were, I think, some of the ones earlier on where I think Brady maybe got away from the run a little early, even when they're down in a game, sort of getting away from that run game. And I think the Bills are one of these teams similar to the Ravens, similar to how Detroit Lions have been this year, where even if you're down by 10, your run game is still an option. It's still something that can get you back into the game. You can generate explosives. And so Kansas City is susceptible. Like, there is some ways to run on them. You're not going to get tons of big explosives on them, but you can rattle off 4.5, 5 yards of carry on this team and set yourself up to be in those third and twos. I think what you can't do is come out too early. I know fans are frustrated they're not passing a lot on early downs, but if you get behind the chains against a Steve Spagnuolo defense and you're in 3rd and 8 or worse, that's where the exotic pressures come. That is where he sends a little bit more stuff that creates a lot of the havoc plays, and you just can't have those in these games. So I think you need to lean into your run game, get physical with them. They're going to do a really good job of pinning their ears back and rushing you, Kyle Loftus, you know, Chris Jones even. But I think where you can get them and where they're vulnerable is Spencer Brown, I think, can work Kyle Loftus in the run game. I think Deion Dawkins can do his thing. And on the interior, this is the best offensive line we've seen in the Sean McDermott, Josh Allen era. And I think you need to utilize that physicality. Games are won in the trenches. Big games are won in the trenches. Running games travel well on the road. And that's kind of been the thing that the Bills just haven't had in their attempt to get over this hump.
Looking at some of the weapons for the Bills' offense, a name that I hear from callers often, we talk about him often, namely just due to it's the everyone eats, but they did trade for him, Amari Cooper. He's been a weird addition, Aaron. I think he's done wonders for the Bills' offense in terms of spreading everyone out. You have to put another corner on him. You at times have to double him up. I think he's opened up Khalil Shakir. He helped initially when Keon Coleman was first coming. Coleman ultimately dealing with an injury, I think, kind of derailed him a little bit. But there's also been games where Cooper's just, you kind of forget he's on the team. Only one target against Baltimore. Is this kind of a matchup with McDuffie that maybe Cooper could exploit them, maybe see the Bills actually push the ball down the field? They're arguably not going to have the same field conditions. It's going to be, quote-unquote, warmer in Kansas City. Could we maybe see the Bills really want to extend the field here with the passing game?
I don't know what they're going to do with McDuffie. That is something that I'm really interested to see, because you're right. Cooper hasn't had the production that necessarily warrants shadowing, but he's had the previous historical production that a defensive coordinator could say, hey, we have to keep a top on this guy, because at any point he could go off. So there is just a built-in respect for an Amari Cooper, even though that production doesn't necessarily exist with the Bills in this season. So I'm interested to see what they do there. If it is Trent McDuffie, I respect his game. He's one of my favorite players to watch, actually. But I'm not scared. If they want to line him up on the outside against Cooper, I would take shots. I would attack it a little bit. I'm not saying force feed it, but you've got to at least script in some shots to him downfield. Even if it's Coleman, if you want to get Coleman on a smaller guy, you've got to at least try to take those shots. Joe Marino has done a really good job, though, point out the Bills haven't been great at taking shots downfield and passing 20-plus yards downfield this year. And so you got to probably generate a couple of those in this game. You got to find some explosives. But if they're going to, you know, match McDuffie on a Cooper or something like that, I think it opens up Khalil Shakir for a big game. And Eric Turner had talked about, you know, with some of these pressures and how much Spagnuolo likes to blitz, I think you'll see a heavy dose of screens. And so you could see a big game for Khalil Shakir and even a Curtis Samuel in those roles of being just kind of like a check of pressure going to the screen game. It's been something that's been more successful for the Bills than in previous years. I know people probably still have a bad taste in their mouth from the 3rd-and-5 screen to Dawson Knox that ended in a tackle for loss and killed the drive. But on the whole, when you really look at the season, it's been something that's really been successful. Kansas City is a good tackling team, but I would still challenge them to come up and be physical and try to tackle Khalil Shakir in space.
It is something you brought up, too, what Joe Marino was talking about, the Bills not being awesome or really even any good at passing the ball 20 yards downfield. One of the early plays in the Baltimore game was a shot to Matt Collins, who was open. Allen just kind of missed him. But Khalil Shakir, another guy you mentioned there, had arguably one of the plays of the game, a 34-yard catch down the middle of the seam from Allen. He has been – he's right back to what he was early in the year, too, where it's just every time the ball is thrown to him, he's catching. He's 13 targets, 12 catches. He's getting over 60 yards in these two playoff games. He just – Aaron, it's been the story all year for me with Shakir. He seems to be the key to the passing game. If him and Allen are on the same page, if they're hitting early, it just feels like they're extending drives.
Yeah, and he is so dynamic, right? Like, the Bills were really trying to replace that Beasley role over the last year and a half without him, and they had some production, but he does everything that Cole Beasley does and so much more, right? Like, with what he can do after the catch. We saw last week his ability to stretch the seam. He does have the ability to go up and make a contested catch, so it's such a versatile piece. And just in, you know, breaking down that Houston Texans game, even the middle of the field seems pretty vulnerable to me in the Kansas City defense as a way to attack and generate explosives. I saw wide receivers run and open pretty much throughout the day for the Houston Texans. It was just a matter of C.J. Stroud took a little bit too many sacks, held on the ball a little bit too long. He did hit some of those to extend some of the drives, but I would expect if you're going to generate the explosives, I don't think it'll be on the outside. I think you take some of those shots, like I said earlier, to Cooper, but I think your real bread and butter is going to be work in the middle of the field, and that's another spot where Shakir can come in. So I'm really expecting a big day from him, but also the tight ends. I would force you know, they're good against running backs out of the backfield, but I would force those linebackers and safeties to have to cover a Dalton Kincaid. I mean, he hasn't met the production of where he was drafted, but Knox and Kincaid have been pretty solid, and I think they demand quite a bit of attention, and I would go right to him in the middle of the field and force those safeties and linebackers to cover.
Aaron Quinn of Cover One on the Wester Hotline. Aaron, talking tight ends there. Let's switch things up. Go to the Bills' defense. Travis Kelce, old friend that has always caused problems for every team that plays the Chiefs. Does he kind of take the focal point this week like Derrick Henry did last week? I mean, the Bills' defense did a great job shutting Henry down, kept him under 90 yards on the ground. Is he kind of the guy that you're worried, aside from Patrick Mahomes, because obviously we know how he can extend plays and things like that, but is Kelce the guy where if the Bills' defense can shut him down, okay, we'll figure everything else out as long as Kelce doesn't get his, we should be okay? Is that kind of the mindset you think, or where do you think things are in that aspect?
Yeah, I think it's a mix. I think Kelce is definitely the priority, and we saw that in that first matchup. Terrell Bernard did a fantastic job of just all of his focus was on Kelce and taking that away. This is something I mentioned last week, you know, where we do these preview shows and we preview a team and we see whether it's a strength or a weakness or something that some team was able to take away. And we point to it and say, hey, that's the way, right? That's how you beat this team. That team also knows, right? So they're also going to try to scheme up some ways to offset what they have at least seen the Bills try to do to take Travis Kelce away. And so that's going to be an interesting matchup within the matchup. I think it's going to matter a lot, the health of Matt Milano. I know Sean McDermott was pretty vague on some of those answers, so I'm hoping we see something today as to whether or not he's practicing or anything like that. It sounds like there's no reason to think he's not healthy, but I know there's been some concern out there. I'm a big time concerned about Christian Benford, right? And where he's at in the concussion protocol here going into the week, because the other concern I have in terms of a matchup on offense is how they're involving Worthy from the last time we watched Kansas City. And I know, you know, there's all going to be the comparison between Worthy and Coleman, and Bills fans don't want Worthy to be successful because of that pick, but they are really getting him involved in this offense as the season goes on. And the run game hasn't been great for Kansas City. Pacheco can go off at any time, and he could be a real difficult tackle at any time, but it's just not been there like it has in years past. But using Worthy in the way that they do is really an extension of the run game, and it forces you to come up and tackle. And that's still an area where the Bills have been better than they have in past years, but it's still an area that I'm always concerned is when teams force you to come up, they stretch you on the horizontal and force you to make a tackle. That's something that's always going to concern me with this Bills defense. And if Benford can't go, even a bigger concern, because he's one of your best at being able to come up and make tackles on the perimeter like that.
All right, Aaron Quinn, Cover One. Aaron, what do you guys got cooking up over at Cover One for this week? Big game, first AFC Championship appearance since 2020.
Yeah, so Eric and Anthony are jumping in the film room here tonight, so that'll be on the Cover One YouTube channel. You want to get in there and check that out. They got a great show set up. And then Greg and I are actually going, we usually go Wednesdays, we're going Thursday this week with Kent Swanson of the Kansas City Sports Network to preview the game. And as always, just check out our YouTube channel. All the guys at Cover One are just grinding real hard this time of year to just bring you as much content, and follow wherever you're on social media. Just search Cover One. You'll find all of us out there working hard to get you guys ready.
Awesome. Thank you, sir. We'll talk again soon. Enjoy the game.
Yeah, try to stay warm out there, guys. Thanks.
Oh, we're trying every day. Aaron Quinn there on the Wester Hotline of Cover One. I'm trying. I am failing.
Speaking of warm, it is 6 degrees, everybody. We made it. We're getting closer to double digits.
Getting closer
to double digits. Oh, seven.
Oh,
seven.
Man.
But you know what? The feels like has gone down. It now feels like -4. So
I got nothing there.
So it doesn't matter that it's up to 7, because it still feels like it's below 0, and it got worse since we got on the air.
Love that for everybody.
Super cool.
803-0550, the number to call if you want to jump on with us. Coming up, though, after a quick timeout, Sal Capaccio joins the show to get us ready for practice number one of the week for the Buffalo Bills. Also, I want to get his thoughts. Josh McDaniels going back to the Patriots for the third time as their OC. I want to get Sal's thoughts on that. Zach Jones, Josh Mitt here for about another half hour. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
Quarterback who was wildly inaccurate coming out of college and unbelievably reckless with the football. has become now a quarterback who we haven't had in the league since 1970. Because that's the last time you'll find somebody who fumbled as little and threw as few interceptions and took as few sacks, negative plays from a quarterback, as this one. Josh Allen has become the greatest protector of the football in the sport.
There is Dan Levitard talking about the evolution of Bills quarterback Josh Allen. Yes, he went from horribly inaccurate, can't hit the broadside out of a barn, very accurate, couldn't stop turning the ball over, and now he protects the ball arguably better than anyone else. Levitard said there, protecting the ball better than anyone in the sport. We go now to the Western Hotline as the Bills are back to practice today as they get ready to take on the Kansas City Chiefs, a rematch of the 2020 AFC Championship game. Sal, how are we doing this morning?
Pretty good, pretty good. Rematch of that game, rematch of the following year in the divisional round, rematch of last year in the divisional round. You know, I was thinking, and I said this, I think, maybe already on the air once, but maybe not to you guys. That game, AFC Championship game, that was the COVID season. We did not travel as a radio broadcast crew. I was not at that game. I was here in Buffalo, was not able to call that game. We weren't able to call it. Of course, Merce was play-by-play at the time. And we did the game here remotely, which, you know, obviously, so I'm looking forward to this game for sure. It's, you know, to be on the field. I mean, there's going to be a celebration one way or the other. And obviously, we hope it's, you know, for the good guys here.
Yeah, I don't need another Stephon Diggs pose. I don't need that. As
we got that the other night in the national championship.
Did we?
The Notre Dame coach.
Oh, Marcus Freeman.
He was like standing outside the locker room watching the TV of the celebration. It wasn't quite like the Diggs pose, but it was close enough.
I don't need another.
It was close enough to. It was close enough for Twitter to make a small meme about it for like 5 minutes, and then they moved on.
Oh boy.
Well, let's hope we have a different problem on our hands and how we're going to handle a stage and celebration and trophy and all that kind of thing. Because that's what I think about. Like, what does it look like afterwards? I mean, this is new territory for me calling a game in this situation.
Sal, one thing I got from BuffaloBills.com, they were doing kind of their five storylines to watch, and I knew the Bills and Chiefs had played a lot. I did not realize this is going to be their ninth time overall since 2020, fourth time in the postseason. Mm-hmm. But it's a fun thing that I got from this. They're the first pair of non-divisional quarterbacks to meet nine times in five seasons since a span going from 1963 to 67. Those last two quarterbacks, Jack Kemp, Len Dawson, Bills and Chiefs. They're not AFC
amazing,
East
right?
Rivals,
I mean,
but they might as well be.
No. So there's been like three different generations of Bills Chiefs. You had the 60s and the AFL, and you go back to what you just talked about, and the Bills played the Chiefs for the AFL championship, you know, back in 1966. Mm-hmm. And the Chiefs won and went to the first Super Bowl. If the Bills had won that game, they'd be considered the Super Bowl I participants because it wasn't called the Super Bowl until a few years later when they went and retroed those names. I don't know if you guys are aware of that, but when the first few were called the AFL-NFL championship game. So after like 3 years, they said, oh, let's call it the Super Bowl, and they went back and renumbered 1, 2, and 3, and that's why the Chiefs were in Super Bowl I against the Green Bay Packers. The Bills would have been in that one had they won. And then, so they were really good teams then. And then you get to the 90s. And I remember I was inside this stadium. I'm standing outside the stadium right now, guys. And it's still cold out here outside the media room. It's pretty packed in the media room. So I'm out here. And I remember being inside this stadium in the 91 playoffs and again in the 93 playoffs. And of course, 91 was, the Bills win that game. That's Steve DeBerg, who is the quarterback for the Chiefs. And then in the 93 playoffs, it's Joe Montana. And a lot of people remember Joe Montana got knocked out of that game by Bruce Smith. He took a big hit. I think it was Smith. It wasn't his last game, though. He did play the next year. But again, those two teams met in the playoffs a couple of times, and the Bills won. Now, here we are again, 30-something years later, and these two teams are going at it again for the right to go to the Super Bowl, and we've been down this road again with the Kansas City Chiefs. So I do think there's some real good historical perspective here.
Sal, we've been talking a little bit this morning about just kind of how different this matchup feels this time around. I mean, it feels like both of these teams are once again playing the same style, but now it's that kind of like everybody eats mindset for both teams. I mean, if you look at the Chiefs, it's still kind of working out the same way. Like, how do you kind of look at this matchup and think, like, does it feel different for you or is it about the same as it usually feels?
It does feel different in the style of play, right, and how these teams have been winning. And look, I say that while the Bills have actually, you know, scored over 30 points a game all these different times this year, and they, you know, set their franchise record. But let's be honest. Like, the Bills, you know, the Bills' philosophy this year has been, we're not going to give you the ball, and we're going to take away the ball, and we're going to protect the football and not make mistakes. And the Chiefs' philosophy has kind of been the same thing, and but they've won like that. They've won lower-scoring games. The Bills and the Chiefs have... You guys played that clip, which is fascinating, that Dan Levitard was just talking about Josh Allen being the greatest protector of the football in the sport. I'll take it a step further. Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and Patrick Mahomes, still incredibly, unbelievably talented. They make these Superman plays, and yet all three of them protect the football. Now, Mahomes did not protect the ball as well this year, especially early on, but I do think I did read, or someone told me, I think today in Kansas City on a radio station I was on, I don't think they've turned the ball over since they played the Bills that week. I could be wrong.
No, that's
so
correct.
He's protecting the ball as well. What's that?
That's correct. Yeah, it's stunning.
Yeah. So if you take a look at Lamar and Josh and Patrick and what they're doing, like for these three guys, what I could argue easily are the three best in the sport, especially at how talented and, you know, wild plays they can make on their talent alone. And yet they've all become great protectors of the football, as Dan Lebatard called Josh Allen. And I think that's where the difference is, right? These two teams have kind of played a game this year where, hey, you know, it's like that Spider-Man meme, guys, where... Mm-hmm. You make a mistake. No, you make a mistake. No, you make a mistake. No, you make a mistake. I think that's really kind of how they played this year.
The documentary on these three in this era in like 25 years, Sal, is just going to be my favorite thing in the world. Yeah, I need a single Super Bowl so that it's not a tragic documentary like Four Falls. But for today, the Bills get back to practice. I assume it's going to be a walkthrough today like normal. But
yes.
there's some injury, you know, quote unquote injury concerns. We don't know if Matt Milano was hurt. We know it's a little weird how it was worded on Monday, but could be nothing.
Let me walk through everything for everybody today. So we're down here at One Bills Drive. Sean McDermott's going to speak here at 12 noon. We'll get an idea on the injury front. We do know that Christian Benford is in the league's concussion protocol. That will not change today. You know, he's going to progress through that. We'll see if he's available on Sunday, but you never know with that. We know Ray Davis was in the same situation last week. He did wind up practicing on Wednesday in a limited capacity. And when that happened, that was very encouraging. And of course, that led to him being cleared and playing on Sunday. Maybe that happens. We'll find out. We also know that Taylor Rapp had a hip injury during the game last week. And he, I'll tell you, being right down there, when he got loaded on that cart last week, he was in a lot of pain. Mm-hmm. And we were told in the sidelines he was going in to get x-rays. And then we were told that he was out. So that did not sound good. It didn't look good. But Sean McDermott on Monday said he's day-to-day. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to practice today. I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't practice today. It is only a walkthrough, but we'll see. If he is limited, that would be really great news. And, I mean, I'm astonished that he was even considered day-to-day after what we saw. Then there's the mystery of Matt Milano. And I say that this way because Matt Milano came off the field during the final drive. He was on the field for, like, the first two or three plays of the Ravens. And there is some video that shows him chasing down Lamar, and as he kind of hit Lamar, it looked like he kind of had a little hitch in his giddy up, like just a tiny little, but we couldn't see because the all 22, the TV never showed the whole angle. But he didn't play after that. But he also never went into the medical tent. He never went into the locker room, and he was on the sidelines. He didn't even play on the 2-point conversion after that. Sean McDermott was asked on Sunday, you know, why that was. And he was asked specifically, is there an injury concern? Did he not play because of injury? And Sean said, not to my knowledge. But he also added that he hadn't had an update on anything from his training staff and Nate Bresky. And I think that's where the mystery comes in. Like, was there something that they were, that came up with Milano that they were looking at? What is that, two separate issues? No, he wasn't on the field because of an injury then, but so we saw something afterwards. I don't know. I don't really know. So let's just kind of wait here. About 15 minutes from now, we'll hear from Sean McDermott, and maybe he doesn't mention Matt Milano at all. And if that's the case, then that's great. Good to go. If he does, then obviously there's something to talk about.
Waiting with bated breath now at this point. Sal, last thing here before we let you get out of here, get you ready for Sean McDermott. Ilyanku, he's back on the Bills practice squad. They released quarterback Anthony Brown. I saw a few reports of that yesterday, but now it's official today.
Yes, yeah, so Ilyanku is back. You know, he's been such a trooper over the last couple of years, actually, on and off the practice squad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he comes up and he's on the practice squad today. And Anthony Brown is no longer on the practice squad. Anthony, good job. You did your job last week to get the team ready to face Lamar Jackson. But that's how this works. That's what a practice squad is literally for, to give a look to the starters of what they're going to see. And obviously facing a defensive line with, you know, Chris Jones and Amenihue. I mean, obviously there a guy like Ilyanku can help out to give a look there. But, you know, Ilyanku comes back onto the Bills roster today. Also of note, I don't know if they will do this, but Bailyn Spector is eligible to come off to go to from IR. He could be designated to return, meaning he can practice. They can open his practice window. I wrote that on Twitter, and obviously there were a lot of people saying, no, don't do that. Joe Andreessen's the backup, and I don't disagree. Listen, just because Bailyn Spector practices doesn't mean he has to be activated. And honestly, guys, there's no downside if he practices and he gets designated to return. He gets 21 days. Then what you're doing is if he practices, what you're doing is you're making sure you're ramping him up in case there is an injury and they do win and have to play in a few weeks in New Orleans and you have another guy there.
Yep, always got to think about, you know, games down the line.
You got it.
All right, Sal, we'll let you get ready for McDermott. Thanks for jumping on with us, and we'll talk again tomorrow.
All right, guys, thanks a lot. Talk to you then.
Sal Capaccio right there on the West Her Hotline, getting ready for Sean McDermott, going to be speaking in just about 12 to 13 minutes here. I'm seeing Joe Marino a few hours ago tweeting out the Patrick Mahomes versus the Bills in the regular season and against the Bills in the playoffs. Something's got to give, man. Mm-hmm. Something's got to give.
Yeah.
1-4 in the regular season, about 65 completion percentage, 260 yards passing, 10 touchdowns, 7 picks, an 85.9 passer rating. In the playoffs, 3-0, 75.2 completion percentage, 306 passing yards per game, 8 touchdowns, no picks, a 126.6 passer rating. You did well against Lamar. You got him to kind of keep, quote-unquote, playing playoff Lamar. He had 2 turnovers, the fumble, the interception. Something's got to give. It feels like their time. It feels like they're due. We talked with Aaron about it. Like it's chock full in sports of guys who or teams couldn't get past a single entity or a team. Jordan and the Pistons. I brought up Steve Young and the Cowboys. There was always that group. Now, of course, us as Bills fans go, yeah, but you also probably told somebody you're not going to lose 4 straight Super Bowls and you did. So I get it, but this just it feels different. Feels like they are a better matchup for the Chiefs than they were for the Ravens. I don't think Chiefs fans are thrilled to be playing the Bills. I think they would have rather actually played the Ravens because they match up better with them. And look, ultimately, the Bills aren't scared of Arrowhead. Look at the regular season stats.
Yeah,
Mahomes is 1-4.
Right, and it's not been a problem for the Bills. They lost one time at Arrowhead, I think.
That would be in 2020, I believe.
Yeah. So I mean, that at that point, it's
no.
Like,
that 2020 that was in Buffalo.
2020 playoffs was in Arrowhead.
Right.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the 2020 regular season.
Right. So yeah, it's just I just look at like it's not a fact of you're playing in their place. It's not a fact of anything. It's just the fact that for whatever reason he's been able to turn it on in the playoffs, but it's not going to happen every year. It's not going to happen the same way every year.
Yeah, your last 3 regular season matchups in Arrowhead, you've won. You've lost in 2020 playoffs in Arrowhead. You lost in 21 at Arrowhead.
Mm-hmm.
Something's got to give.
Yeah.
Something's got to give. If they lose, though, because it popped in my head, so I'm going to say it.
Wait.
Is it going to feel like it's an insurmountable thing if they lose on Sunday?
No. No. I don't think it is. Because every time you've seen this loss happen, it's been a different way.
Yeah, which doesn't give me a lot of confidence, personally, for me.
No, see, I think the reason it would feel insurmountable is it's every single time it happens the exact same way.
Mm-hmm.
This, you know, run of games where it's you're losing all these playoff games, 13 seconds, or, okay, wait, first AFC Championship game, because I feel like that always gets glossed over because of 13 seconds.
Yeah, because of what comes next year.
So with the first AFC Championship game, they were just flat out better than you, right? Like it looked like that for most of the game.
Quote unquote cowardly on fourth downs.
Yeah, yeah. It was never really a contest for most of the game. That was just kind of its own thing. Your team grew from that. Next year, you go out, you have an incredible offensive performance, and you just fall apart a little bit defensively, and you lose 13 seconds. Tough, hard. Next year, Bengals, obviously that. And then the year after, or no, I'm sorry. Wait, am I getting this right?
They played again in the playoffs in 23. They lose to the Bengals in 22.
Right, okay, yeah. So then 23, it's, okay, how do we overcome this? Oh, they're in our place this time. That's great, right? Like, let's see if it's any different. Something else happens where it's, you know, you're not making the right calls offensively. Your offense is kind of sputtering a little bit, but your defense kind of keeps you where you need to be. That's where it's different for me. Every single loss is something different where you're learning and you're growing. If it was the same thing every time, like, oh, your defense is getting torched every single playoff game, or your offense is just not getting up and not doing what it needs to do, then it would feel insurmountable because it's like, well, okay, we get to the same point every year and we make the same mistakes. It's different mistakes every time, so you can learn each time. Hopefully, this one is the, all right, we figured it all out. We've learned all our lessons. Let's go win this thing.
Something's got to give. 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here for just a little bit longer until 12 o'clock before we get you over to Sabres Live. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here as we get you off to Sabres Live here in just a few minutes. So earlier in the show, Liam Cohen, it was reported, is taking himself out of the equation for the Jaguars head coaching job.
Smart choice.
Sadly.
I mean, listen, I understand Trevor Lawrence is there, but the vibes are off.
The vibes are off with Trent Baalke, the whole thing. I saw... and I want to get his tweet up here. Ryan Green, radio host over in Jacksonville, 92.5 FM. He's a friend of the show. He's been on, I think, with us, and he's been on with Show and Bulldog as well. He said an hour ago, at this point, I'll wait till next week and hire Joe Brady. I was so convinced he was not leaving because I didn't like any of the jobs. And I want to imagine, we took a call too, talking about, you know, Joe Brady becoming the next Ben Johnson.
Yeah.
You know, do this year, be awesome, and then next year spend the entire year where it's like, as long as this doesn't completely be turned into a tire fire, I'll be the main guy.
As long as you don't become Bobby Slowick, then you're the main guy. Because that's kind of what happened last year. It was Ben Johnson and Bobby Slowick, and now it's just Ben Johnson.
And to the point where Bobby Slowick might even get fired if you asked a lot of Houston fans. I don't see that happening. Brady has, like, evolved, like, even from his half year last year to this year. I want him to, because I do want him to take better jobs. I want him to, like, go to a team that is in a better quarterback class, quote unquote.
I also want him to go to the NFC if he does.
Yeah, I'd love him to go to the NFC. I'd rather him not be an AFC guy.
Right. You already have too much competition in the AFC with Baltimore, with potentially Houston, with Kansas City. Like, there's too much going on here. Go to the other conference.
Yep. Nothing to worry about, though, at least for right now. That's going to do it for me and Josh today. Coming up after a quick timeout, Sabres Live. Sabres got a 3-2 win over Vancouver yesterday. You guys will be there to break it all down. Sabres next in action on Thursday against Calgary. Thanks for listening, everyone. This is WGR.